Hello, hello. Welcome back to Inspiring African Travel. This is James here, and we are up to episode 3 of series 8, Africa's Transformational Travel Power. I really hope you've been enjoying it so far. For this episode, we catch up with a very special guest, Andrew Flatt. Andrew, for those of you who've been listening to the podcast for some years, has been a long time contributor to the podcast. He's a really good friend of mine and been a colleague for many years now. Andrew's a through and through Botswana boy, so talking to him about transformational travel in Africa was absolutely made for him. For this conversation, we actually got together in my new home of Devon in the UK and ventured out to Dartmoor National Park, which is now my go-to place for wilderness while I'm in the UK. It was his first time out there, and we walked across the moors and explored how transformation can happen quite often in the most remote places. We spoke about the Makgadikgadi salt pans, of course, where an almost unforgettable experience of nothingness leaves Andrew feeling really nourished and at one. But also during the episode, we're going to chat about some meaningful conservation work that takes place in one of Andrew's other favorite places, which is the Kenyan Swahili coast. And also chat about one of Africa's most vibrant cities. Actually, what I really enjoyed about our talk when we were speaking about transformational travel was how much we often get caught up, at least we do, with the fact that transformation in Africa needs to happen in places of extreme remoteness and wilderness. But actually, Andrew's story of Cape Town shares something quite different. It's such an incredible blend of cosmopolitan culture, food and dining, and how nature seamlessly integrates into this stunning city. So we had a really good chat about how urban African experiences can also be just as transformative. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy our hike with a mic. See what I've done there? As we chat on our way through Dartmoor, finding out much more about the transformative travel power of Africa. Hope you enjoy. Let's head out to Dartmoor. See you later. Since you are the master of accents, are you comfortable with doing the entire podcast episode in a Devon accent?
I'm convinced there is no Devon accent. The only person with a Devon accent is you, mate. I haven't heard one person say beer right.
There you go. That's your Devon accent. We're in Dartmoor.
We're in Dartmoor.
It's not blowing an ooly out here. How's that?
Four seasons in a day.
No, that guy wasn't from Devon. He was definitely a Londoner that's moved down to Devon.
Yeah.
Okay, and how would you describe your experience on Dartmoor? Would you say it's transformative?
I wonder where that came and weaved itself into the conversation. Well, we've only been in it for, what, half an hour?
Sure. But have you noticed how friendly the people are?
Yeah, everyone's waved to me. I feel like I'm back in Maun. People exactly. On horses instead of donkeys.
Yeah.
But they're all still waving, same way. Small town, warmth, general level of happiness that you don't necessarily see elsewhere.
I like the way that guy, so for context, we've just bumped into two people having a lovely walk who just told us they're going to Botswana on holiday in 3 weeks' time. And they did mention the fact that it was a little bit muggy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just thought to myself, it's a pretty good thing you're going to Botswana in winter.
Yeah. Yeah, they were saying muggy, and I was busy putting my jacket on. It's going, it's a bit muggy and hot. And I was like, okay, right. My jumper, gilet, whatever James calls it, is going on. But it's pretty impressive. I mean, you don't look at England on a map and go, there's going to be massive, massive open spaces out there. You kind of just assume it's going to be little villages, little towns, railway tracks, you know, cities everywhere.
Mm.
But this is amazing. I mean, yeah, okay, sure, some of it is carved out with fields, but they're big, green, open pastures. It's not like it's commercial buildings and mills and whatever else. This is stunning.
Yep. And I would say that this, my visit here to Dartmoor, over time, it's been a transformative experience for me because it's made me realize that there is wilderness when you seek it out here in the UK. And I think we're so lucky in Africa. And I think that's why we'll see this theme threading through the entire series. That Africa just lends itself to a transformative travel experience because it's raw, it's unrefined, it's wild, it's harsh, you know, it's all those things.
Yeah.
And some life here is a little bit, yeah, contained and easy and does. You have to really try hard to go and find out wilderness spaces. And I've realized you can. And somebody commented on my posts the other day and said...
Oh, was that your first comment?
Well, you know, micro-influencer. Emphasis on the word micro.
On the micro.
But that despite the fact that I'm so lucky in my job to go to incredible places in Africa, that I still manage to find joy and beauty in the places here in the UK and Europe and things like that. So,
well, that's the key, I think, actually, just to add on to it. You know, we're talking about Africa as a transformative travel destination, but I think what it does to you is it gives you a taste and it gives you a hunger, you know, to seek out transformative travel experiences back home or wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's almost the place that gives you the realization that this is what you should be seeking out. And that's maybe, you know, well-traveled people, that's maybe what they've been missing. They've traveled all over the world, they've seen all these incredible places, but what has it done to them? What has it left them with? What have they left sort of taking from it? And,
yep.
In general, most African experiences, when done authentically, done right, done with an open mind.
And why do you think that is? I mean...
Man, we could...
There's a lot to unpack, I know.
Yeah, we could theorize for hours. But, you know, I really think that there's a simplicity to Africa and to tourism in Africa that is hard to put into context. You are generally going to places that are wilder. You know, even the cities have a wild side to them. And I say wild as in natural, I say it as in smaller, less condensed, less advanced in various contexts, but you're almost taking a step back in time in a lot of senses, and the priorities are very different. What you're doing and taking from these places is very different, and that's maybe what still sets it apart. You know, it's without even trying, you're always taken out of your comfort zone and challenged intellectually, physically, emotionally, whatever it might be.
What do you think is because of the... Are you talking specifically about wildlife, maybe on a safari, or just... Do you think it's because maybe most international people that come to anywhere in East or Southern Africa are a little bit just scared, maybe? You know, Africa has this reputation of being, you know, unsafe or deep, dark Africa, and there's wildlife, there's... poor, poverty, you know, there's things that people, that conjures up in their minds, and that maybe that's why they're afraid?
Yeah, it could very well be. I mean, you people say you have to be quite an intrepid traveller to go to Africa, which is not necessarily true.
Mm.
There's something for everyone. And maybe that's also what lends itself to being transformative, because people go in with maybe even the wrong idea or misconceptions. And come out amazed at how spiritual a journey can be, how how giving it is. Oh, this is cool.
Birthday picnic.
That's special.
Happy birthday to you.
Yay! Whose birthday is it? Shah. Happy birthday.
Yeah, you've just transformed their day. Oh, look at that field.
I thought you were going to do some ululation there, Andrew. It's quite interesting talking to people from travel industry about transformative travel in Africa and things like that, because we've been in the industry. And I know that when I think about what I want to do, where I want to travel, and not everybody's like this who works in our travel space in Africa, but I just want to do more of Africa.
Yeah.
Because I find Africa just speaks to me. And there's so much of this continent I still want to explore. But you mentioned your experience of moving to Cape Town as somewhat transformative.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Having grown up in a small town in Botswana, you know, and grown up in Maun, and spending my life in you know, very wild spaces and in places that people fantasize about visiting all their life, they plan and save for and sort of, you know, they put so much into getting out there. I think took for granted just how transformative African travel can be. And you know, I used to frequent Kenya on holiday with my family, and we'd go down and explore a bit of South Africa. Been to, you know, a lot of places that are really special. And it was easy for us, and it was familiar for us. So for a long time, I didn't realize just how special it is. And I got into this industry, and you know, everyone who works in the industry is either from there, you know, who they've grown up in a place and it's kind of second nature to talk about it, like me, or they're from somewhere far away, had one experience that changed their life, and now they've dedicated their whole career to it.
Yeah.
And I always found that very inspiring, but very foreign to me. I couldn't imagine how, not I couldn't imagine, but I couldn't clearly see how it could do that. And it sort of was one of those things where I just went, oh, I guess it's a personal journey. But there's been a few experiences over my life where if I reflect back on it and I think about what the sort of principles that are important to me are as a human being, you start to realize just how impactful they were. And a big one for me was moving to Cape Town. You know, I'd left Maun, been to boarding school, lived in apartments in Johannesburg and Pretoria, been back in Maun, and just never really had a sense of home. I struggled with finding a sense of beauty in urban spaces. I've, you know, traveled the world, and I love London, and I love, you know, San Francisco, and I love Sydney, and I love Melbourne, and all these places, but I just struggled to see the beauty because I felt that they were man-made, and anything man-made couldn't be beautiful. And it all changed. So I moved to Cape Town, and I just started realizing how incredible, you know, we as humans, our development and everything that we bring to this world can be if it's integrated into nature, if it's given the chance to be a bit more authentic. And it made me realize, number one, that I was privileged to have that problem. I was privileged to think that nature's everywhere, because it's not. And the fact that I couldn't see beauty in urban spaces, but so much of the world and most of the world that the people listening to this podcast and that we interact with, most of their worlds is urban. So they see beauty in that urban. And I was so lucky that I'd been exposed to so many open, wild, natural and raw spaces that I couldn't identify it. But it was quite a life-changing sort of experience going there and being able to
Give me some examples of the beauty of Cape Town. I mean, you don't, like last time we spent a lovely 3-4 days together at your place and you took me around. I think, I don't know how many times I just said, this place is ridiculous. I mean, I've been to Cape Town before, but when you let your guard down and explore places, and as you grow older, you see things through different eyes. And I was just like, wow. I mean, how more people, it's like, I wouldn't want to let the secret out. Too many people are going to come to Cape Town because it is insane. So you give me some of your moments of like, where you just jaw drops.
I mean, to be honest, you're right. You don't want to let the secret out. Don't move to Cape Town. You'll be driving our rent prices up.
Traffic's bad.
But I think Cape Town is very unique in that it still holds on to its integration to nature. You know, that Table Mountain National Park and having the wineland so nearby, having the ocean right there.
Yeah.
There's so many different ecosystems that you can visit in a short little trip. We went for a hike in Silvermine and you just stop on top of the hill there and you've got the whole Hout Bay harbor and bay area. You've got the beautiful blue ocean. You've just got...
It's dramatic because you suddenly go so high up in the mountain there.
Yeah.
And you feel that sense of awe as you look down these steep
It's very impressive.
And
you can look at the town
and
appreciate it because you can imagine yourself there.
Yeah.
You can see it. It's been built around this beauty. It's not taken over the mountain. It's not taken over the ocean. It sort of works. There's like a synergy between the development and these natural wonders.
Yep.
And I think even I find my favorite part of a little trip to the airport from Cape Town is always I'm in the City Bowl and you drive around Devil's Peak on Philip Kosana Highway and you just look out over this expanse in, you know, Stellenbosch and going down to Somerset, the whole mountain range that comes along there. You look off the other side, you've got the ocean going all the way up Bloemfontein and towards the West Coast National Park. You're driving along the side of Devil's Peak, and if you peek to your left, you've got the whole City Bowl, this condensed little developed wonder with amazing restaurants, food, culture, hotels, cafes, all of those. It's just, it's a very unique place. It's a very blended place, and it's got a lot of history.
Yeah.
You know? I think what sort of brought to the forefront for me was just this idea that Africa has beauty in everything. It's not just the wild spaces and the rural cultures.
Yeah.
It's the modern societies and the urban cultures and spaces that are just as beautiful, just in very different ways.
And intertwined in Cape Town. Intertwined. And that's the epic thing.
Yeah. You're never far away from something as well in Africa, which I like. It's a monstrously big continent. But you're never, if you're in a city, you're never far away from, you know, quite a rural area, an area filled with local cultures. You're never far away from a wild space. You're never far away from something that just feels real. And I sort of go back to that thing I mentioned earlier about it being almost as if you're going back in life, back in time, and it's simpler. There's different principles. I heard this interview that Trevor Noah did on a podcast a while ago, and I don't quite remember the full thing, but he was talking about how modern society and particularly in first world countries, they've sort of lost the sense of community and they take it from you.
Mm.
This idea that you have to do everything and they take you away from your family. You must go and live in a city to study and then to work. You must have your own home. You can't live with your family. You must have your own home. Then you must make your own family.
Yep.
And you kind of get divorced from all of the sort of community aspects that are so important to being human and being happy. You know, they always say, it takes a village. That is a pretty good representation of what life should be like, but we get so divorced from all of this. And then you have to pay to get any of that community back. You pay to be part of a running club, you know?
Yeah.
You pay to have someone come into your home to nanny your children. You pay to have to fly to go visit your family. You pay, like, we've become so disconnected from sort of this idea that we're all meant to be together.
Yeah, you know? And he's created his own community of friends very consciously, hasn't he? That's,
yeah.
Trevor spoke about his friends' network becoming his family. And
yeah.
I can see that. So your experience, well, it's less of a travel, but it's more like a moving. Cape Town's really just, it's transformed your way of life, mate. And
yeah.
So if there was ever a good reason for you, anybody, to go and visit and travel to Cape Town, I think you would have convinced me.
Well, you say moving, to be honest with you, it still feels like travel.
Yeah.
4.5 years later.
Well, you got so much of the place to discover still. That's what
so much.
You guys are going, you and Chanel go off to different places every weekend when you get the chance, and you know, thriving there, you guys, in your travel experiences around Cape Town.
Yeah, and it adds to it. It keeps our love for adventure and for the place alive. And that's the transformative part, is it's created these people that we wanted to be, you know, instead of just staying still, instead of just being content with an average life, which there's nothing wrong with.
Yeah.
You know, if that's your sort of goal. But for us, it was always a want for more. And we're allowed to do that now. We're able to do that.
Yeah.
We have this ability and freedom to do that. So that's what Cape Town gave us. This.
Definitely.
And you even see it. You meet people who go and they spend a week in Cape Town, or 3 or 4 days in Cape Town on a trip.
Yeah.
And you speak to them afterwards and they went, I went here, 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 here. And they're always planning another trip. Always.
Yeah.
And it somehow got Cape Town. And they ask for advice and you can give them advice. And they'll go and do it because they've changed in even those 3 or 4 days. They want the local knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be able to go, wow, this person said I must go to this cafe. There's just this very real connection you get.
Yeah, definitely. What's another moment in your life, even if it was when you were younger? So much of traveling to Africa is, it's a whole different series of podcasts to chat about, but traveling with families and young kids and how it can transform them for their future life and things like that. But any stage in your life, is there something that stands out in your world of Africa?
Oh man, a lot. You posed the question the other day, you know, you said I must think about some of my transformative experiences that I've had when traveling. And again, you know, I've been so fortunate, that almost too fortunate, to even realize how transformative things were at the time. And one that I pondered a lot on, which was something that really changed my perspective as an adult.
Mm.
But when I think back, I realize what it gave me as a kid as well, was the Makgadi Gadi salt pans.
Oh, yes.
You know?
I mentioned that with Stuart as well as a...
Yeah.
Wasn't on my top list, but it felt like I couldn't. Because I was going to chat to you, and I think
yeah.
I know Andrew absolutely adores that place.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I struggle to find the words to describe what it means to me, because it's not like a normal feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I almost want to say you're lonely,
yeah,
and in the most beautiful way. It's freedom.
I know. You run out of superlatives when you start to talk about them.
No, literally. It's just so ridiculous. We liken it when we're doing our sales talk to the moon, you know?
Yeah.
It's the only landscape you can kind of help people picture, put that image in their minds. But it really is like that, you know? For me, what I think I enjoy the most about it, and what really made me realize that this place was going to be special, and it was going to be somewhere where my mind would be in a space that I could address things, I could think about things deeply, I could really, like, you know, find maybe what I didn't even realize I was looking to find was when you head out there, it's this journey. There's nothing about the salt pans that makes you want to stay. You're going there knowing you're coming out.
Well, you know, because it's so harsh. It's so cold at night and it gets so hot during the day. It is an inhospitable environment.
You're certainly not going there for 3 nights. No. That's not what anyone's doing. So you go out there and you feel like it's part of a journey. There's a start, it's happening, and then there's an end. And maybe that bit of sort of like suspense helps you to get in that mindset. But as you travel and you start to move through these different ecosystems, becoming more and more harsh and arid, and shedding your layers of familiarity as you go, you start to recognize things less and less.
Yeah.
It's not...
The vegetation starts to thin out.
You know, there's no more fence posts.
Yeah.
There's no more cow dung, which in Botswana is everywhere.
Yeah.
You start to see less birds, hear less sounds around you. It's just the vehicle eventually crunching on that salt.
Yeah.
And that kind of feels like that is a journey through your mind and through your soul. Like you are, each of those layers that you shed is opening yourself up.
You're entering a new realm, almost like, can you imagine like, remember in Star Trek or something where you like, you go through that wormhole of like into a new dimension.
Mate,
I
grew up in Botswana. I wasn't watching Star Trek. I was outside. Was it Star Trek
or was it maybe Widget the World Watcher? Not sure, cartoon. But I've just got this vision of you are literally entering a new dimension.
Yeah, spaceship through a new dimension. And it's actually a great way to imagine it, because when you hit the pans, it's like one of those movie scenes where the spaceship has now been like building up speed and it just explodes through this wormhole and then it slows down always for some reason.
Yeah.
And it's just in this open area.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like. You're out there. There's no sound. There's no light. There's no people. There's no nothing.
And how does the no sound affect you?
I get the old ringing ear for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those people who can't be still. I'm always fidgeting. I'm always talking.
Yeah.
I almost feel uncomfortable if I'm not around something or someone and able to engage with it. Cool.
So you're consciously thinking to yourself, right, I'm in this environment. This is not natural for me. And you go and walk off or something, do you?
Yeah, literally. I just get up and I move away and I have a moment where I force myself to just stop and be where I am. And it just changed my whole mindset. The first time I can remember going as an adult, there was nothing I could distract myself with. I just found myself, almost my mind, taking a deep breath, centering itself and going, right, you know, whatever it was that I needed to deal with in my life, that was the moment.
Yeah.
And because I knew I was there for one night, because I knew tomorrow morning, I'm back on a vehicle, I'm back to familiarity, to people, to distractions, to Wi-Fi in the room, to connect.
There's no cell phone signal out there, there's no Wi-Fi.
I knew that tonight was the night I was going to think about it. And it wasn't a painful experience. I didn't solve all the world's problems. I didn't solve all of my own problems.
Yeah.
I just remember being so free to think with no barriers.
Yeah.
I could just be honest with myself. I could just be free. I could just be still. I feel like that quietness and that lack of any sort of pollution allowed me to just kind of disconnect entirely.
Completely. And isn't it wonderful? We've been lucky to go enough to go out there together, you and me, with, you know, just ourselves and various other people, but people that we have common interests with and that we connect with. And isn't it nice being out there with people like that? Because you can just give yourself that space.
Yeah, there's no pressure. Nobody,
no pressure. And no small talk. You can just wander off on your own for a moment and taking it all in. And yeah. And do you feel like you solve any mental problems, or are you just not pushing anything in itself? You're just
almost
releasing.
You know, when I yourself. Go back there, I feel like I'm resetting a battery.
Yeah.
I'm just going to the DB board, the electrical box, turning everything off.
And you know it's good for you.
And I know I need it. Yeah. So I know I have the freedom of mind to think about things, I know I can just be honest with myself in that moment. I can't get away from myself. So I switch it all off. Whatever comes to mind, I think about it.
Oh, I love that analogy.
I've dealt with a few things, and the next morning you turn it all back on and carry on.
So when you're getting a bit jittery and stressed, we need to say, have you tried turning Andrew on and off again?
Have you tried turning it off and back on again?
Send him to the pans.
And, you know, you asked as a child, what do I remember? When I was younger, I went out, oh, I must have been, I don't know, 10 or 12, a whole group of friends and I, we all used to have quad bikes and mound. That's your transport. Mm-hmm. Maybe we were older, maybe we were 14. And we missioned out into the pans with one of the dads from the group.
Naughty little. Did you get permission? You naughty
little bastards. Yeah, we did. We actually went through the whole process pretty diligently, only because there was an adult around.
Okay.
But I remember being out there, and at the time, all I wanted to do was just ride quad bikes, you know, cruise around, try sneak a beer here or there maybe. But I didn't realize how impactful it was on me. And it's the first memory of being out in the salt pans that I have. Although I had done it before, I think that was the first time I can register that I was in those pans. And I just have this overwhelming memory of a sense of freedom. No chains, no shackles, no pressure.
Even as a kid living in such a free, wild society, you felt it there.
Yeah, you know, you think there's no pressure and there's no influence in the bush, but there's massive pressure. You're always aware. You're in places where there's wild animals, potentially dangerous animals. The natural sort of world around you is out to get you if you're not careful. Because it doesn't have any favoritism. If you're not aware, smart, and lucky, things can happen. But out on the pans, you're not thinking about that.
Safe, no insects, no animals.
You're just you in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, who can say that they've experienced that before?
Absolutely. Look at this view, bro.
Wow. It's impressive. You're going to have to cut out all the panting. We are walking up a hill.
Yeah, I know. Can't cut that out, I'm afraid. You just need to get fitter. a sleep out night on the Makhadi Khadi salt pans is a quintessential transformative travel experience that anybody traveling to Africa and has Botswana on their list one day should highly, highly consider doing for that exact reason. Is there somewhere else that you can stand out for you, Andrew,
other than
Cape Town's beauty and Makhadi Khadi Pan's openness and soul-rich, enriching experience? What else stands out?
I'm a very big fan of the East African coastline.
Okay.
I really thoroughly enjoy the Kenyan coast in particular.
I wondered if this was going to pop up.
Yeah, true love of mine.
It's like the perfect contrast to a desert boy living and growing up in Botswana. Go into the
tropical,
rural East African coast.
The only similarity is warm water.
Yes.
And not much facilities.
Yeah.
Which I love. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Kenyan coast.
Why so?
There's a little town called Watamu that I frequent.
I heard about it.
Yeah, it's special. There's, you know, what I often think is like, if you look at Africa from the outside going in, when you think of safari and culture, one of, if not the most prevalent culture and safari destination that comes up is in Kenya. Mm-hmm. You know, the Maasai, the Mara, all of these things. So culture and sort of storytelling has been so well ingrained into the tourism stories and the way of life in Kenya for so long. But that East African coast has just been preserved as real and authentic and down to earth. It's got all the influence of all those strong cultures.
Yep.
But it's blended into some of the Arabic cultures, into some of the Indian cultures. It's just such a...
So it's a melting pot of cultures and societies and history and culture, yeah.
And it's very, very raw.
Mm.
A lot of that coastline has not been massively developed. You know, every little town has a few big hotels, but that's anywhere in the world. Outside of that, it's very raw. It's very real. You buy your food from a small supermarket or the side of the road.
Yeah.
You want fish for dinner, you want a red snapper, you order it with a person. You know, there's a guy who comes to your house and you say to him, I want a 2 kilo red snapper. The next morning at 7 a.m., there is a guy with a kikapu, with a little woven basket with a fish he caught with his hands that day. Wonderful. You give him money in his hands. Like, it's just primitive and real. And it's so interesting because the rest of the country is this very proud and bold safari destination. Mm-hmm. It's fast-paced. There's a lot of very big bravado characters. And then on the coast, everything is shoes off, slow pace, kikoi for pants. No one wears shorts. It's just kikois. You know, there's always a time in the day to slow down and relax, take a chill. No one's rushing anywhere. And what was really sort of influential to me was going there and experiencing all of that, but then seeing how invested the communities are and how invested they're willing to be in conservation. This little coastline in Kenya, there's a project there called Local Ocean Conservation.
And they were up for an award at Experience Africa.
Correct.
Travel show.
Yeah. Yeah, they were a finalist.
That was a really emotive little video clip. I'll definitely share that on our page at some point. Yeah,
it's an incredible project to be involved in. It was set up, I think, 25 years ago, mm-hmm. and or 30 years ago even. And I think they've just saved something crazy, like 25,000 turtles. Wow. They've just crossed the mark, if not more. But they basically work with local farmers to preserve the marine biodiversity there and marine life, mm-hmm. With a particular focus on turtles. It's a really important area for turtle breeding.
Oh, they're so threatened, aren't they, just in terms of plastic waste and nets and fishing.
And over tourism and over development of prime nesting beaches. And what's happening, because that area is quite, the fishing is pretty prevalent, both mm-hmm. sort of local economy and sort of game fishing, you know, the influence of boats and nets has been crazy. So what these guys do is they work with local farmers, local fishermen, who will, if they catch a turtle in their net, in years gone by, you kill the turtle and you eat it. It's food. Simple as. Now they've put in programs where they're helping these guys understand the benefit of bringing the turtles in. And in a lot of cases, they're in pretty bad shape. You know, if they've ingested plastic or been caught in a net or caught on a fisherman's hook, there's often quite severe damage. So it's not just about them bringing them in and then releasing them, but
rehabilitating. Oh, wow. Have you ever been there to see them release one of these?
Yeah, that was the transformative bit about it all, see the journey. Sorry.
Jumping the gun.
To go through it, to understand the necessity and the dedication, man. It's 7 days a week, any time of the day or night, you get a call to say there's a turtle, you're there. Mm. And then watching them rehabilitate this turtle, clean off the barnacles if it's been ill, mm-hmm. you know, heal an injury, and then release it. And the turtle can't say thank you.
No.
It speeds off at a pace of knots. And it's gone.
Yeah.
And no one turns around and says, you've just done an incredible thing. And they've done that 25,000 times.
Wow.
And I've been lucky enough to be part of a few releases.
It really touched me when you talk about your mum and how, since your mum and dad moved there, and she's so actively involved, both your mum and your dad, in the project, and how, you know, we've spoken about this with Tempe as well. You know, the longevity of funding is so critical, because every week they don't know if they're going to have enough funds to be able to support the staff and get the food and run the project.
And as is the case so often in conservation, if you stop, you're not just stopping or pausing, you're going backwards.
Mm.
You know?
Exactly.
Because it's people, you know, the community guys, the fishermen, they're doing this out of the good of their heart, but they're also doing it because there's a benefit to them.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if they bring in a turtle, they get paid to bring mm-hmm. in the turtle rather than kill it.
Yeah.
And they rely on that. You know, if all of a sudden they're not getting paid because the conservation effort is no longer, and if they don't have somewhere to bring those turtles, they're going to be killed again. So,
and presumably, you know, if you're traveling to Kenya's, what do they call it, the Swahili coast?
Yeah.
And around Watamu, you can go and see this project and help donate and visit some of these.
Yeah, there's some really nice ways to engage with it, which I also really like. They've got a volunteer program. Mm-hmm. They've got some basic accommodation there. You can sort of pay to go stay there. They help provide some meals, and you can work with the team there. The eco warriors, the ocean warriors.
Oh, lovely.
Do a couple of weeks, do a couple of months. They've got a marine biologist who's there, so you can learn a lot. They do a lot of work with local craftspeople, pulling out plastic and making, you know, crafts out of it, so you can go and buy stuff, you can donate. It's just a really good feel good, and it's so nice to go somewhere to relax and be on holiday and be at peace and be calm, but also do good.
And that's I mean, the biggest moment obviously is, must have been quite touching to be honest, to see that a turtle that's gone through so much has such a story to tell and heading back out to sea.
Yeah.
It must be really powerful. I mean,
yeah, it was pretty emotive.
How did it transform any way of you appreciating life or the ocean or the planet? Or
I think, you know, things like conservation to me, I always think that they're scary words, they're scary concepts. It's kind of like if you join a company, maybe you're early on in your career or you've just sort of moved into a new industry or something, and someone starts talking about strategy and it's these words that seem incredibly intellectual and only the top people know, only the smartest people understand it. Conservation, only scientists and people who dedicate their whole lives to it understand it. So I think it intimidates people, and I think it also has become such like a buzzword that it has detracted from what the core of it is. And the moment, literally seeing this little turtle that I had seen in an enclosure not long ago, being carried out, being part of the team that carried it out, put it on the sand, watch it scuttle off and just disappear into the ocean, knowing that that turtle's living another day because of the efforts of people, made me realize how fundamental and rudimentary it is. It's not complicated.
Yeah.
It's easy to engage with. You don't have to be particularly smart or rich or philosophical or anything. Like anyone can get involved in it. I went on holiday to Kenya. I ended up releasing a turtle, donating a little bit of money. It wasn't going to break my bank. You know, it was just so easy to do good and to feel good. And it made me crave this feel good. I'm not saying, you know, you go on holiday, you should always go and donate lots of money and stuff. You know, of course, if you can, that's amazing. But this idea that when you go somewhere, and Africa's really good with that, there's so much exposure to being able to do good in a very easy way.
Well, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. And that is why it's not only does it feel a daunting conservation and sustainability to people who live abroad in cities and clinical, comfortable houses and things like that, away from nature. They don't access it. They don't see it. And so doing something like that, traveling to Africa, seeing wilderness, seeing wildlife affected by climate change, by pollution, suddenly makes it all real, doesn't it?
It makes it all real, and it makes you realize how important it is to get involved and how easy it is to get involved.
Yeah.
That's why I'm such a big fan of IAT.
Wait, we don't do abbreviations. We don't do IAT.
Inspiring African travel.
Yes, mate.
Yeah, James and abbreviations are not buddies. We debunk a lot of it, I think. You're adding a person or a personality to amazing things, and we're just kind of allowing ourselves and our listeners, I say our very loosely.
This is, I think, your fourth appearance on this podcast.
yeah. Clearly, you're struggling to find new guests. we want you to feel like you understand how you can get involved.
Yeah.
Or you can ask.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I love listening to you boys natter. You talk a bit much, but the projects are amazing. I don't understand how I can get involved. It's that easy. And literally, click of a button and you can start getting involved or thinking about what other things you want to get involved in. Traveling to Africa, changing your perspective on what conservation is, what the meaning of life is.
Yeah.
You know, experiencing freedom and doing good.
Yeah, lovely. Well, I think this is a great place to stop. I mean, if you're...
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. It's definitely a photo opportunity spot.
Yeah.
Look, do you find those wind turbines beautiful? I do. And there's not too many of them, but it's kind of affects the landscape over there, but it's doing good.
Yeah.
Renewable energy.
I mean, that looks pretty cool. There's a bunch of people riding horses down in the valley.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something I'd do.
Well, I think, thank you so much for giving me your time and thoughts again, mate.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
I think those are three beautiful examples of transformative travel. And I like the way, you know, we work in travel, so we kind of understand what transforms other people, because we're lucky we get to do that, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought that was great. Really enjoyed it. All right, mate. Well, let's venture down to the valley and hopefully to the pub.
I think that's a great reward.
Later.